There are instances in clinical research when the clinical outcome goals of the study are superseded by an unexpected discovery. Researchers from the University of Florida reported in the August 13, 2009 edition of the New England Journal of Medicine that the retinas of adults treated with a gene therapy to restore partial function adapted and created new regions to interpret the visual signals. In effect, the treated parts of the retinas may have acquired enough image processing strength to rival the retina's normal center for visual perception, called the fovea, for the brain's attention. And I'm pleased to introduce Dr. William Hosworth, professor of ophthalmology and molecular genetics at the University of Florida College of Medicine. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing just great. And having read the paper and read the news releases, this, you know, when looking at neuroplasticity of the nervous system and just how the brain adapts to things, I thought this is absolutely fascinating. And I wanted to start by getting the public, the listeners, to understand what the basic anatomy of the retina is and how it processes light in order for the brain to see before we discuss what some of the functions were with regards to the treatment.
Sure. The retina is really just a few layers thick, and it lines the back of the eye. And basically what it does is it receives light from images, sunlight, and light bounced off of all the images you see. And cells, the rods and cones, your photoreceptors, receive that light, and they convert the light into a neural signal, basically by a relatively complex series of events that amplify a single event, a single photon absorption, into a signal that can actually be sent to the brain and be received as part of an image in the brain. I should say, though, that the retina is sort of a dumb receiver in that sense. It's, mm-hmm. Images are not created in the retina, they're created in your brain. So the retina receives the information and sends it on as neural impulses to the brain. And the brain sorts that information into something that's useful.
Now, with regards to the patients that were involved in the study, what disease process were you examining and what was its pathophysiology with respect to the anatomy that you mentioned about the retina?
These patients are born with an inherited form of blindness. They all have a little bit of vision when you're very young, but typically by the time they're 5 or 10 years old, they're legally blind. So these patients so far have all been 10 or 15 years legally blind. Now, biologically, what's happening is that the molecule that is actually the first molecule that interacts with light is a molecule that can change its shape after it absorbs light. So it goes from kind of a folded-up structure to an open structure. And so that act of absorbing light, opening up that molecule, actually triggers this whole chain of events that leads to neural signaling and vision in the brain. So what these people lack is the ability to convert that molecule, once it's opened, back mm-hmm. to the closed form. So it's not once it's interacted with light, it's not capable of doing that again without being converted back to its folded form. And so these people are missing that protein. So simply what we did is introduce into the photoreceptors a gene for a normal copy of this protein that they're missing, and basically just restore their ability to reactivate their ability to absorb light, if that's making sense.
Now, with regards to that, what was the basic science that led to the development of the study? That is, inserting the gene sequence into the retinas, and the understanding being is that you used a very common virus.
Yeah, it's about a 15-year process. we've been struggling with for a long time, and so really understand that it's been sort of my life's work to get to the point we're at right now. Yeah, it involves basically taking a very common human virus that it really infects virtually everybody in the world. The interesting thing about this virus is it doesn't cause a disease. It's not like many viruses you think of. It doesn't cause a disease. It just is. It just exists to exist. It's there to copy itself. This virus is very simple, and all we did is over these last 15 years engineer ways to take out the genes it had normally and put in the genes that were potentially therapeutic. And so basically, we're just substituting viral genes for our therapeutic genes, putting them back in the virus, and the virus then is a very efficient delivery system. In fact, there's nothing we know that's as efficient as these evolved viruses at delivering their DNA to cells. So that basically, then all we do is take this recombinant virus that has our therapeutic gene and inject it into the eye next to the retinal cells so that the virus can then deliver a good copy of the gene these patients are missing to those cells.
Now, what were some of the findings initially, and can you provide some examples of how some of the patients responded?
Oh, sure. The responses were actually very surprising right from the beginning. We actually first started treating these patients about 2 years ago now, mm-hmm. and what was a little bit surprising was that we only treated a portion of the retina in these first few patients. We didn't treat the entire retina, so we only treated about 10 or so percent of the retina. So every patient after just a few days would tell us that they had a new bright area in their vision. You know, they aren't totally blind. There's all degrees of blindness, mm-hmm. and they have a little teeny bit of vision. They can detect light if it's about a million times brighter than we can detect light. So they have some ability to sense light. And they all said they had a bright area in their visual fields. And when we asked them to just write on a piece of paper generally where that bright area was relative to looking straight ahead, mm-hmm. every one of them was able to identify the region where we put the vector. So we were pretty sure that we were having a positive effect on their vision. And then we went and actually measured how much visual sensitivity they had gained in that region. It depended on the patients. The least responsive patients still gained about 600-fold in ability to sense light, and the most successful patient and the one that subsequently had an additional positive reaction, gained almost 60,000-fold
wow.
ability to see light. So that's only about 15-fold lower than normal. So she was almost converted back to normally sighted within the area that we treated. Remember, that's only about 10% of the retina right now. We'll expand that in later patients, but in these first patients, we needed to be conservative about what we treated. So these patients had noticeable, had quantifiable improvements in vision, and they all noticed it. They all said things like, I mean, they said a number of different things. One patient is kind of he complained actually in the beginning. Mm-hmm. He said he was losing sleep at night because now the clock on his sideboard was too bright. And so he actually learned to adjust it and not quite happy with it. He just turned the clock away from
right.
it a little bit. Second patient, about 3 months after she was treated, she went to a 4th of July party in the United States, our Independence Day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the traditional things is
sure.
to shoot off fireworks. And so she said that although she'd seen fireworks before, especially when she was a little girl, that she had forgotten how colorful they were and how beautiful they were. And she said even better than that, because it was at night, she said she saw fireflies for the first time in her
wow.
life. And that was quite exciting to her. She hadn't seen those before. And that was all due to this new vision. The third patient, who's actually Canadian, by the way, is a big athletic guy, and he got stir crazy in his room. We had to keep them in bed for about a week. So we walked him outside, and he looked up and he said, "Oh, I forgot how blue the sky was." You know, it was only been since a child that he's seen, you know, a good blue sky. So that's an advertisement for Florida. But anyway, so they've all been quite happy with their new vision. But then, what happened most recently is that, you know, we follow these patients.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming back every 3 months. And actually, they'll be followed for 15 years. Not that frequently, but they will be followed once every year for about 15 years now. So one of the patients, the one that responded the best, nothing changes at 3 months after treatment, 6, 9 months, nothing has changed. She still has her, you know, 60,000-fold enhancement in light sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
Everything looks good. There's no bad effects happening. So she says at 12 months, but not at 9 months, that she's beginning to see things that she never saw before. And specifically, she said, you know, when I sit in my parents' car at night, I can see the digital clock for the first time in my life. And we're thinking, how could that be? Because nothing has changed, you know, between 9 months and 12 months. And then she said something that sort of gave it away if you think about vision very much. It might not if you didn't. But then she said, I think I see it better if I actually look above the clock.
Mm-hmm.
I don't look right at it. And so that started us thinking, well, maybe her visual attention had shifted. So normally people use their central retina, their fovea, and look straight ahead because they focus on objects that are straight ahead. They fix on objects that are straight ahead. What she might have been doing, and we tested this and confirmed this, that she was actually now shifting her gaze off of the center of her vision, her fovea, onto the region that we, the retina that we treated. The reason she did that, we presume, is because actually she had a little bit more light sensitivity in our treated region than she had left in her fovea. And her fovea was her only vision she had left. And so typically, if you present her with a very bright object and she can see it, she'll use her fovea and she'll fix on it very nicely. So what we did is do a series of tests where we asked her to just look at various objects of various brightnesses. And when the object was bright, an object she could see before treatment, she stayed on her fovea. But when the object was too dim that she could not see it before treatment, and in fact she couldn't see it before 9 months, she would shift her gaze at 12 months and focus the object onto the region of retina we treated because she had a little bit more sensitivity there. So it's kind of fascinating. She hasn't actually lost her fovea. She's just gained what we call a pseudophovea, a second fovea. So she now has, and I don't think there's any ever been an instance of this where a person has two useful regions of vision, and her brain tells her which one to use depending on how bright the object is. If it's a bright object, she continues to use the fovea that she always used. If it's a dim object she couldn't see before, her brain is now rewired to tell the eye, the muscles of the eye, to move a little bit, not very much, just a little bit, so she can focus on the region of retina that we treated. So she uses both of them depending on the brightness of the image she wants to see. And she doesn't know she's doing this. This is all, you know, this is all right. Spontaneous. The brain has decided that this is a useful piece of retina to use. So it's doing this. And we don't understand yet how all of this rewiring takes place. It'll be that sort of for the next 15 years.
Well, and that's sort of
fascinating insight into how plastic the brain still is, even in adults. She's in her middle 20s.
Wow. Well, that sort of segues into the question I was going to ask you next, was what are the next steps in this research with the information that you have now?
Well, we are treating larger areas of retina because if 10% is good, there's no reason to think 10% might not be better. These patients don't lose their retinal function evenly, so they have sort of islands of region that we might be able to get rescue in and then regions that may not.